So having said that, this segment, there's so much to talk about nationally.
Wow, and, yes.
And, I mean, so many Supreme Court decisions.
Yeah.
Interesting primary race in Colorado.
Yes.
Yesterday, Tuesday. And a lot of fireworks locally, not just the light parade. But we have some problems with the city. We have a county that's been told you got to hire an outside financial guy to to get you in shape, and has other problems.
And I'm just going to steal about 15 minutes in here, because in the midst of all of this, we also learned that Donald Trump made more than $2 billion this past year in his first year as president, compared to his previous year before he was installed. It was about $600 million. So, much of that $2 billion is cryptocurrency.
Right.
Or
and
real
much
estate
of that was
deals
by
like
the United Arab Arab.
Yes. And real estate deals in Saudi Arabia also, at least in the first administration, he made a show of separating himself from the grift.
No,
but now it's overt. And so we've got on top of all of this, I want to talk about lawlessness.
We should note that before you do,
okay.
We should note that that comes from his statement of what he made.
That's right.
That's not us saying this guy made $2.2 billion. What he's admitting
you're
to.
You're right. That is absolutely right. That was his report of his.
That ain't the stuff under the table.
Yeah. And this is so profoundly troubling. No president ever has looked at the office as a grift, and he does.
No.
And he does not serve the people. He serves himself. Blatant.
So you actually know things because you were a professor of political science and history.
And before that, I was a newspaper reporter during Watergate. As were you.
So tell us your thoughts.
Okay, my thinking is this, that I was an undergrad when Watergate broke in journalism, and so I was following all of those. Woodward and Bernstein were my heroes, etc. I was appalled. We're listening to the hearings, the Senate Select Committee hearings on Watergate, following what the special prosecutor was doing, the grand jury indictments. And it's really much, much more than, and I worry that history is repeating itself in part because we've forgotten or we minimize what that was. Thank you, J.D. Vance, who said, it's hardly any, it wouldn't bring, the fact that it brought down a presidency is crazy. Because then he could bring in the deep state, which, of course, Nixon called political enemies. But it was much more than that. It was the burglary, of course, in 1972 in June, on my birthday, 1972. A few months before the presidential election, 5 well-dressed burglars were caught red-handed trying to break into the Democratic headquarters at the Watergate Hotel, hence Watergate. It wasn't much of a story, but these young reporters, Bernstein and Woodward at the Washington Post, began to cover it. They're the ones that found that link, tantalizing link with the White House, because the White House phone number was in one of the burglars' pockets. In time, they saw a real strong connection to the reelection campaign, but it didn't gain any traction with any of the other news outlets or with public opinion or political leaders, and Nixon was reelected president, carrying 49 of the 50 states. Now, meantime, the grand jury was investigating the burglars, and one of the burglars, once he was indicted, began to talk, and he implicated others higher up, and eventually other government employees began to talk. It turns out Watergate was not an isolated event. You'll remember this. It was part of an entire operation called the Plumbers Unit that was set up in 1969. The White House was very frustrated with leaks. So, of course, they set up a Plumbers Unit to stop the news leaks. And it grew to a staff of more than 50 people and diversified into sabotage of political opponents, Republicans as well as Democrats, legal wiretaps, disinformation campaigns, including
They go into the shrink's office for...
Yep, they sure did. Theft of confidential medical and psychiatric files of political enemies, including a vice presidential candidate, Thomas Eagleton of the Democrats, and Daniel Ellsberg, the man who leaked the Pentagon Papers. They had informers and anti-war groups in the Democratic Party. They collected dossiers on members of Congress and the media. It's just hard to get across how very corrupt all of this was. So Watergate, of course, did finally come to light through these various threads. You had a special prosecutor had been appointed, and you had the Senate Select Committee, and you had grand jury investigations. Well, the special prosecutor is working with the grand jury. The sort of an offhand comment in the Senate Select Committee, it came out that there were tape recordings. This was huge because it was moving up closer and closer to the White House. Now you could really find out.
And what the tape recordings were in the
Oval Office. And even Haldeman and Ehrlichman, the two closest advisors to Richard Nixon, didn't know about it. Nixon was hoping to, you know, he would release this as a record or something after he left. But everyone now wanted those records, and Nixon stonewalled and said, nope, executive privilege. They were done in my, you know, presidents get absolute executive privilege. So that was part of the battle that ended up before the Supreme Court. The one special prosecutor was fired. There was a big public outcry. The Saturday Night Massacre, you will recall, is what it was called. Nixon had to back off and then have another special prosecutor appointed. And that special prosecutor put in a subpoena for even more tapes. And then it went up to the Supremes, who found that no, a unanimous decision that you cannot, presidents don't have absolute immunity. This is evidence needed in a criminal trial of the burglars. And in criminal trials, you have to have access to evidence. So that, and that was an expedited hearing. 3 days later, the bipartisan House Judiciary Committee reported three articles of impeachment. The Senate prepared for impeachment trial. And on August 9th, just a little, soon after that, 1974, Nixon became the first president to resign. Now, this is where I think the impunity comes from. Nixon's top staff and his U.S. Attorney General spent time in prison for obstruction of justice. Huge amounts of evidence of obstruction of justice. You know, coaching the burglars to lie before the grand jury, bribing them, all these things that... This is from the White. This is the president of the United States. He got a pass because there was all this debate. You can't indict a sitting president, so he was named as an unindicted co-conspirator. You can't. That was and remains. I think the
well,
convention.
Well, then he also got a he when he resigned, Ford, his vice president,
yes,
became president,
gave him a pardon, and basically for any crimes. I mean, it was a blanket pardon. That's where the original sin occurred. And that, I think, basically said not that the, you know, this was the Republican Party, the big tough on crime. You do the crime, you do the time. Instead, it was crime pays. Yep. And Nixon got away with it. And a few years later, you'll also remember that Nixon is out there recessed, oh, what I did wasn't so bad. And everybody, I mean, began to have a change in, certainly among the GOP, and this was a party that had stood up, and it was bipartisan that they were going to vote articles of impeachment. So he, it's become now the orthodoxy among conservatives that, oh, no, it was his political enemies, or as J.D. Vance calls them, the deep state. And I think that was a real pity. Now, at the time, I was naive. 1976, the bicentennial year, as we are now, I was optimistic. I thought, what do you know? Checks and balances work. You know, here we have a constitutional system, and the public got involved, and the news media got involved, and the courts and Congress and state governments, everybody rallied. We all protected our political system. No, that was, That was 50 years ago, and I was naive. It was not at all. It was not at all. It was really a precursor to what we're seeing today, this brazen impunity with breaking the law. That's my lecture, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I agree with it all. I was going to throw in a couple of people who weren't around then.
Yeah.
I saw one of the hearings I watched at a city council meeting because it was so important that Bob Munson was then the mayor. And he said, we'll start late so we can watch.
Absolutely.
This. And our own Senator Montoya was one of the panelists.
I was doing an internship with NASA's Ames Research Center. I was in this little office that had the TV set. And we just ran the hearings the whole time. And people drop in. These were scientists. These were astronauts. Everybody was curious what was going on. And not just you know, vaguely curious, but they knew what was at stake.
I later got to know pretty well the first of those prosecutors you mentioned.
Oh, did you?
Archibald Cox.
Archibald Cox, yeah.
Yep. They fired him, and then the AG wouldn't do Nixon's bidding.
So they fired the AG?
You know, they fired
They named another AG, the deputy AG, Elliot Richardson.
Got the third one to fire.
Yeah, he refused to fire him, the deputy AG, and then they named Robert Bork. He was the Solicitor General, and he became then the acting AG, and he fired him.
Let me agree with you in general, but I also agree with Vance in the realistic sense that, he's right. That now this would just be a pimple on the butt of
it would be a 12-hour
any
news
sitting
story.
President, you know?
That is true. That is true. And I think...
And that's partly because, to some degree, Trump learned what I think is a lesson of Watergate. Uh-huh. What got him and what usually gets people is the cover-up.
Yes.
You know, you do something...
Yes.
And then the extra mile you go to cover it up... It involves you in a bunch of lies and a whole complicated. It's like lying to your mother when you're a kid. If you said you went to such and such and saw a movie, there's a bunch of stuff you're supposed to know about your day that you don't.
Yeah.
Trump learned that. Yep. He doesn't bother covering up. He just does it out in the open.
Remember, Trump as a young man had that. There's a link also with Roy Kahn. Who had been with Nixon on those Senate investigations against communism in the State Department, and then Roy Kahn then became a Trump advisor when Trump was a younger man, and I think that
he was a great mentor to Trump.
So I do believe that that is the lesson, and we're not seeing. That's one reason why there's this impunity. It's so brazen because there's no cover up. You can't accuse him of. I mean, he lies. But it's the stuff that is really criminal is overt.
Well, another factor in the fact that it's a 12-hour news story, Trump could murder his wife, and other than the fact that everybody thinks she's a pretty ex-model, that'd be 12 hours and done too.
Yeah.
But the other part of that's my latest soapbox. Is our hyper-partisanship.
Yes.
And one thing I wanted to ask you, I wrote a column asking the question, basically, do our two-party system, which we all know was not contemplated by the Constitution.
Yeah, framers did not envision that.
And I think that they knew about parties in Britain, but it wasn't like this. At any rate, then Jefferson... And certainly Washington didn't want to see it happen. Washington was very much against the partisanship. And it's gotten to the point now where they're huge. They're the thing.
Yeah.
You want to run for something, you better get in one of those parties.
Yep.
And maybe you don't agree with them. I mean, when I was young, I was far to the left of the Democrats. So other people are in the middle between the two.
Yep.
Or they just... have different views on different issues, and they don't want to follow party discipline. So the parties do a lot of stuff, you probably know more about this than I, informally, that we'd have to get done in terms of communications in government. But they also create this partisanship where
it formalizes not just a rivalry, but really a bloodthirsty competition.
Yeah. I mean, the way I put it in my column is like you're rooting for Ohio State or Michigan, and whatever their, if their coach molests children, you find a way to explain it. Your coach, you explain it away. It doesn't matter. But if their coach, says something wrong on the radio or, pets his cat wrong, it's a big issue.
That's the other element that's changed so much is news coverage. Of course, this was really, when the first Watergate prosecutor was fired, Nixon did that on purpose on a Friday night because he knew even the Sunday papers had already been put to bed. Nobody would hear about it.
If you think back when our country was started, it took days for news to get anywhere.
Weeks in some areas.
Weeks, yes.
News coverage. And now it's, blink of an eye.
That's been a factor, and it's, we see it in sports too, that everything that happens is instantly public.
And it's not filtered in a sense. There's no thoughtfulness.
But let me ask you about the partisanship.
I think
the parties
would
we be better off if we somehow outlawed the two-party system? I don't know how
we'd
do it.
Well, I don't think you could do that constitutionally.
No.
You could certainly gut the power of a two-party system, lead to more multi-parties if you got rid of the Electoral College, because we saw, for instance, in 1990.
There are other reasons to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I am not at all a fan of Electoral College. But whenever, what's his name who ran in 1990 as an independent, he was going to cut taxes. I mean, he won
it was a really
rich fellow.
Yes.
Anyway, he ended up winning a large percentage of the popular vote and zero electors because the way they were distributed, it's winner. So that's the other thing. Get rid of the Electoral College.
Get rid of winner take all.
Only two states don't use winner take all. But that means a party, you could win office by one vote and gets to dominate everything. So you could change that. That would also help with partisanship.
If we had, as Crucis now has, if we had ranked choice voting.
Yes, that was the third thing.
We didn't have the two-party system. If we had six interesting people running for president, Trump would never have been elected.
Right.
Because the ranked choice system says, okay, who's your first choice? Well, if your first choice doesn't make it, who's your second choice? And you got to get to 50, above 50%.
And then once all that's tallied,
Trump would have got his 30%.
Extremist people fall out.
You know,
they might get the first vote, but they're not going to be a second choice.
Second round, he'd rise from 31% to 32%.
Yep.
And then somebody else.
Yeah.
That was more acceptable to everybody.
A broader swath of
as
Americans.
As a second choice, yeah.
So I think that's another one, the ranked choice voting. And I think open primaries is another possible because we really need to. When I was studying all of this initially, independents really accounted for like 15% of the electorate. Mm-hmm. Now they're 30%. Now they're more than some of the political parties, 33%. And that says people are really disaffected with the two parties. And so they don't have a vote at all on who gets to be the final two candidates. You and I should be in charge. Yeah. We could get this straight. And then we back off. We would not hold on to power.
We'd be like George Washington. Walk over.
Yes.
Get it arranged and sit down. Go
yeah, home. Absent the wooden teeth. I'd like
and
to
the
pass.
Slaves.
And the slaves, yeah. Slaves and wooden teeth. We'll take a pass. Anyway, you had some other interesting observations on the day. Lots of stuff going on.
Well, I was thinking that one very conservative friend emailed me in response to I was actually sending my column around to people, but he said with what's going on locally, I'm thinking about becoming, a declined estate. And he was talking, he is more troubled than I am, of course, about the question of our lieutenant governorship.
Yes.
To me, the lieutenant governor, it's a forgettable position. Harold Pope ran, did not even come close to winning, but he ran, put himself out there, and Maggie Toulouse Oliver won handily, but then health problems forced her to walk away. And the question was who should be in her place.
And I understand that she's interested in coming back.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Okay, but you know more than I do, I think. You have
pulse on more risks. Stephanie Garcia Richard.
Yes.
Who, like her. She's, we have mutual friends up in Santa Fe, and she's been on the show. And, like most of what I know that she did, she's interested.
Yeah.
And, in fact, now looks like, for people who don't follow this, the Central Committee in the Democratic Party votes for somebody.
Yes.
Got to do it. I think it's at least 70 days before the election.
Yep.
To a replacement candidate for somebody who's out for any reason.
Yeah.
And the way we're doing it this time, or the way Democrats are doing it, is the gubernatorial nominee, Holland, is going to get to choose, basically. She vetted people. She chose Richard over Pope, basically. There were a couple others in there. And probably, although Pope is still suggesting they should do otherwise, be sort of interesting, but they will probably vote the way she wants them to vote. Be interesting if they did not. But it raises a question. I think more Republicans are criticizing that one than Democrats. But it raises concerns.
About process.
Yeah.
And
about
fairness.
About process and who gets it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the Republican Party, I mean, they're in real disarray. They had a state chair who was also an incumbent running for county commission in Otero County, running to be reelected. And they also tried to get rid of Duke Rodriguez in the gubernatorial primary. Courts threw that out. And then the courts also said, after people in the party complained and brought a lawsuit, you can't be the umpire and play third base too. She can't be the party head. And Republican rules even said that.
Yes.
So I don't know her personally, but, you know, I sure don't approve of that conduct. And also, how dumb are you? And then meanwhile, and I don't want to say too much about this for a lot of reasons. It saddens me for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. But their state treasurer is sitting in jail right now. She liked speed and she killed somebody.
Yes, a bicycle accident that was just
then
devastating.
Walked away. Walked around and then drove. He's lying there in a process of dying.
And he was howling. He was in pain.
Well, no wonder. He had a bone showing through his leg. And she walked around and then drove away.
That, to me, is the main crime, even more than the speeding and hitting the bicyclists.
I'm very lucky I never had that happen to me when I was a kid.
But
I drove so fast and so drunk.
And the young man later died. I mean, he died not later. He died.
No, he died
at the scene.
Like within an hour. Anyway.
That's very tragic. That is a real heartbreak for our community and for that family.
And for everybody.
And for everybody, yes.
I agree. Anyway, I think both parties are, you know, I think our two-party system is a hazard. I think it's destroying.
And you're right. They're called factions. That's what the framers referred to parties. It was just that it ended up with Jefferson, even though he was opposed to parties, he ended up essentially founding the Democratic Party, the party that, in opposition to the Federalists, which was John Adams' party.
Right, and Hamilton, I think.
Hamilton, definitely. The monetarist, the industrial guy, So I think there are things that you've outlined and that I followed up on that ways to cut power for parties.
Okay.
To ensure that you've got a fuller representation of ideas and people, and you don't have this hyper-partisanship. Well said, sir.
You said it.
Well, you said. I'm agreeing with you. So the big hoopla on the 4th. I'm leaving town, so I won't be participating, but what are you going to be up to?
Oh, I don't follow much of that. You're doing things on the 4th, you know, it's, you know, means about as much to me as it does to my dog.
In fact, your dog hates it.
I got this question, though, before we have only a moment left.
Yeah.
So one quick question. Are people less enthusiastic about this 250th because of the partisanship, and they either, hey, I hate it because, you know, I won't celebrate because Trump's president, or I won't celebrate because I hate the Democrats, whatever.
Yeah. Yes, I think that it's having a real impact. And we didn't see that in 76 because Watergate had been resolved and we thought everything had worked. So we felt very celebratory. That sense is not there. Not now.